Funding for THINK comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to THINK on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How do immigrants become Americans, and how does engagement within and beyond their communities affect their identities and their access to the full privileges of life in the U.S.? While studies of immigrant groups in Texas often focus on those from Latin America, the state is also home to significant numbers of people from Asia, most notably India and Vietnam, who, despite their cultural differences from one another, share some fascinating paths toward a sense of belonging in their adopted country. My two guests are here to talk about that. Caroline Brattell is professor of anthropology at SMU and co-author, along with Deborah Reed Danahay, of the book Civic Engagements: The Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. Prasad Thadakura is General Secretary of the Indian American Friendship Council. Prasad, Caroline, welcome to THINK.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Chris.
I want to start with this. There is the formalized process of becoming a citizen through naturalization, and then there is this process of moving to this country and becoming involved and actively participating in the community. Caroline, why was the latter more interesting to you as a subject for research?
I guess, Deborah and I are both anthropologists, mm-hmm. and so we tend to look at things from the bottom up, and from the try and get inside the heads of the people who are actually having the experiences. And we felt that there's a really narrow understanding of just naturalization and legalized citizenship, and really just doing initial field work in these communities. We saw all kinds of ways in which we thought people were expressing their citizenship in a participatory fashion in terms of civic engagement. And so we decided that this was an unwritten story for this fourth wave of immigration that is going on right now, and we wanted to capture it. And as you suggested in your opening remarks, we also felt that people were kind of paying a lot of attention to Latino communities, mm-hmm. albeit the biggest communities in the United States. But this area had these significant immigrations of Asians. The Indians and the Vietnamese are the two largest Asian populations in the area, and they make a really interesting comparison. So, we thought there were these other ways, really, of looking at what citizenship means.
Prasad, as an Indian immigrant, were you surprised, were you aware before you worked with Caroline about the similarities in some ways of these processes between Vietnamese immigrants and Indian immigrants?
Not really surprised, because it is a very natural immigration to Indian Americans because of both are democratic countries, mm-hmm. as well as English-speaking. Most of the Indian Americans are English-speaking population. So it is very easy for Indian Americans to come and immigrate in this country. As you see, now we have Texas has the fourth largest concentration of Indian Americans. We have about 250,000 out of 3 million population, according to U.S. Census 2010. Also, Indian Americans in DFW Metroplex, we have about 110,000 compared to other Asian Americans, about 341,000. So we are all highly educated, talented, law-abiding, peace-loving, tax-paying, good, God-fearing, hardworking citizens who are contributing very highly to this economy. So it is very easy for us to come and assimilate in this mainstream.
I want to talk about that word mainstream, because it's something that comes up in the book, Caroline, and sometimes it is used as a shorthand for mainstream equals white, I should say, European American, middle class Americans. And so in some ways you find the term problematic, but it may come up here simply because it's a word that people use. So talk a little bit about
that. Well, Deborah and I actually wrestled a lot with this, because I find, and I think you heard Prasad just use it, and I found in working in the Indian community that it's, again, what we would call an insider's concept, or they've appropriated it as something to which one is working toward. Mm-hmm. We try not to use the word assimilation, because we don't like this sort of hegemonic kind of idea of who you have to be. I mean, I think the most astounding thing we found for both the Indian and the Vietnamese communities is that people can participate and be good citizens and enter into whatever that larger public sphere that is sometimes referred to as the mainstream, from a position of difference. And that's a really main conclusion of this, you know, that you can be Indian and also be American. You can be a good citizen but maintain a lot of your cultural differences and, in fact, use your own institutions as a way to enter that civic sphere. But you know, I don't think Debra found as much we listen very carefully as anthropologists to words and how people express themselves. So I heard mainstream more than she did. But she heard other expressions like, you know, doing good works or something like that, which we also and in the Indian community, I don't know how Prasad would respond to this, but I heard so much about giving back and an obligation to give back because people felt like they've come over here and they've been given a new opportunities and their children have new opportunities and it's time to give back. And when you'd ask people what's the meaning of citizenship to them, that came up over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of cultural organizations that end up playing a really large part in people's lives, at least in places like North Texas, where, as you mentioned, Prasad, there's a significant community.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about how people find their way to these organizations and why they become involved and what they're expecting.
As you know, Chris, there are more than 100 plus Indian-based community organizations in this metroplex. Each one brings a lot of values to the mainstream. We don't want to lose our identity and culture, traditions. As you know, India has several official languages, mm-hmm. as well as hundreds of dialects. We came from different backgrounds, different cultural values. We want to keep up those by that we can give our language, mother tongue, as well as our rich cultural heritage to our second generation. That is the reason we keep up all our activities within our regions as well as to expand to the mainstream. Probably you may know a lot of rich philanthropists are coming from India nowadays. They are contributing very heavily for education institutions, even in California, in New York, New Jersey area, where there are a lot of entrepreneurs who are making a lot of money. They are giving back to the society with hospitals as well as in education institutions. But, we have a lot of similarities between USA and India because this is a melting pot, USA, as well as in India also. We have the highest Muslim population in the country after Indonesia. Mm-hmm. We coexist very well with different religions, different regions, Muslims, Buddhists, Punjab, Sikhs, as well as Hindus, a lot of people there. That is the reason, even though we come from one India, but still we want to keep up our cultural heritage. That is the reason you see about 20-plus temples in this metroplex, and 7 gurudwaras, which are worship places of Sikhs, mm-hmm. 10-plus mosques, and 10 Indian churches, Indian-owned churches, and 10 Buddhist temples, as well as a couple of Jain temples. We all Indians, but at the same time, we want to keep up our cultural heritage. We want to coexistence with the mainstream.
What Prasad just mentioned is fascinating because it brings up an interesting tension in that he's come from a place or, some time ago, you arrived in 1985, is that right?
86.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But a place where people were very comfortable with the fact that you could be Indian and be all these different things, whereas sometimes people come to this country and non-Indians, assume that every Indian is the same. And so there's that sense of preserving identity and even that comfort with diversity within that identity. Can you talk to that, speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, well, the whole second chapter of the book, we sort of talk about the Vietnamese and the Indians in terms of these sort of layers of identity and how do people think of themselves as Indian. We don't do as much with the regional variation that Prasad just articulated because that's not as important in the Vietnamese community. There is some diversity, certainly there's religious diversity and some ethnic diversity. And we were particularly interested also in that category of Asian American, which when I was doing the interviews, a lot of people see that as an assignment by the American mainstream or the American society. I mean, it's a problematic concept of Asian, but pragmatically people say, well, we're going to maybe have to start working together to gain political clout or civic presence or political position based on that particular identity. And so we explored in the book, you know, arenas which are Asian, where Vietnamese and Indians actually might come together. And so that was a sort of interesting manifestation of it. But I think anthropologically, we always think about people having multiple identities, and depending on the situation, one or the other will come out. So I think, you know, as Prasad articulated, you have associations for particular regions of India, but then you have an organization which he has been actively involved, the Indian Association of North Texas, which is kind of like an umbrella association that really tries to bring people together. And, in the book, actually, this is Deborah's favorite chapter. There's a chapter called Festivals and Banquets, which we read as civic spaces and political spaces. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he may read them as, you know, we're celebrating our culture, but I can sit there and see something else very powerful going on in terms of sort of claiming and establishing both civic and political presence.
Well, let's take a quick break. We'll talk more about those festivities in a moment. My guests this hour are Caroline Bertel, who's professor of anthropology at SMU and co-author of the book Civic Engagements, the Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. My guest also is Prasad Tharakura. He is General Secretary of the Indian American Friendship Council. If you'd like to join this conversation, we have some lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Jeff Whittington has joined us in studio now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a great conversation. Really excited to be returning to it in a couple of minutes. We're going to take just a moment right now to remind you of the fact that it's could be the next to last day of the winter membership campaign. Our goal, of course, is to wrap this drive up in half the time by tomorrow evening, tomorrow afternoon. We have a huge goal this hour and next hour, Chris, to stay on track to do that. Amy Titus has made a contribution to the station to do some matching during the show today.
Those are always great.
Our goal for the hour is 75 contributions at any amount. During this break, just this break, the first five gifts of $60 will be matched dollar for dollar. So please call right now, 888-694-6931. This is a speed match. The first five contributions of $60 will be matched dollar for dollar by Amy Titus. You can go online and make that contribution at kera.org as well.
So that means that the moment that you make a $60 contribution, if you were among the first five, the station actually benefits from $120 worth of money. You know how this money is put to work every day on this show and throughout the year and throughout the program day. We do have copies available, by the way, of this fascinating book written by Caroline Bertel and her co-author Deborah Reed Danahay. It is called Civic Engagements, the Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. Really interesting piece of work, lots to think about within the book. We have it available as a thank you gift when you make a contribution this afternoon at or above the $120 level. If you would like to get in touch with us now and make that happen, please go online to kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931.
We heard from you after the last campaign. The last campaign was actually a pretty quick campaign, but last winter, our campaign took 24 days to reach conclusion and be successful, and we heard from you. You want, you know, more efficient, shorter membership campaigns. So we're giving you that opportunity. You know, Chris and I are here to help you make the decision, to remind you of how much you get from KERA every single day when you tune in, what you get from this show. But really, it's up to you. It's up to you to make that call. If you want this drive to wrap up tomorrow, like we've been making the case for a couple of weeks. You've been hearing that. You've been listening during the membership campaign. You know it's up to you to make the station a success. Well, if you wanted to wrap up successfully tomorrow, then make that call right now. 888-694-6931. It's 1-888, toll-free number, 694-6931. Remember, the first five contributions just during this break of $60. So we really only have a few more minutes where you can get in on this speed match from Amy Titus. Amy Titus is going to match the first five gifts of $60 that come in during this break, either on the phone or via the web. So please don't wait. Please do it right now.
I know for so many of you, as for me, it's easy to put something off until a hard deadline comes up. Well, we have a hard deadline. We are trying in this hour to achieve 75 contributions in any amount. We would love to have contributions at the friends level. We would love to have contributions at the average level of, say, $120. There's a lot in between that. And even a contribution, an additional gift of, say, $20 or $30 or $50 or $100 would be fantastic right now. So please don't wait. Go on the phone to 1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. We will be back in just a minute with Caroline Bertel and Prasad Thodakura.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Prasad Thodakura, who is General Secretary of the Indian American Friendship Council, and Caroline Bertel, Professor of Anthropology at SMU and co-author of Civic Engagements, the Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. If you've got something to share with us during this conversation or want to ask a question, you can do that over the phone at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So let's talk a little bit about these festivals and banquets. I think one thing that really fascinated me was the idea that as an outsider to maybe these communities, I would assume that people are simply taking something they did in their country of origin and reproducing it in the U.S. But in fact, very often they are things that have been created with really special purposes for this newly American audience.
Sure. Chris, good point. Actually, as a matter of fact, very fortunate. I served as the president of India Association of North Texas in 2002, which is the largest organization, mm-hmm. and there are hundreds of organizations affiliated with this organization, and we do a big celebrations like India's Independence Day celebrations. We do that every year in the August 2nd week. August 15th is Independence Day. We do that at Lone Star Park, where you can see 15,000 plus people attend that event. As a matter of fact, just we celebrated our India's Republic Day at SMU over the week last weekend. So not only India Association of North Texas, as I mentioned before, there are several organizations. I'm very proud to serve on Dallas-Fort Worth, World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, as one of the board of directors. And we bring a lot of variety of cultures mm-hmm. to these mainstream organizations. And I'm also serving as the president of a Telugu Association of North America, which is a national organization. As a matter of fact, we're doing the biggest conference in Dallas at Dallas Convention Center next year from July 4th to 6th. What I'm talking about is these are the different organizations bring large gatherings to the mainstream and to come and celebrate with us. So this brings a lot of vibrancy, not only for Indian Americans, to the mainstream as well as Indian subcontinent. When I say Indian subcontinent, people from Pakistan, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, India, all these people have similarities of enjoying similar types of foods mm-hmm. as well as entertainment.
It's funny how food can bring people out like nothing else.
And also entertainment, we enjoy the same music, mm-hmm. movies. As a matter of fact, Bollywood is one of the biggest in the world. And we release movies here one day prior to India. Mm-hmm. That means all these Bollywood movies, these are the congregation places. Phanesha is the biggest center mm-hmm. where all these movies get released. So we come and celebrate occasions. When we come and celebrate, automatically the mainstream people also come and join us to know the culture, to mingle with the crowds. So that brings a lot of, I would say, friendship among all the communities.
Now I would say, because that chapter sort of uses India Night and the Tet Festival in particular. And, of course, the Tet Festival for Vietnamese, we all know about the Tet Offensive, mm-hmm. right, dating back to the Vietnam War. So that's somehow in some Americans' memory. And I think the interesting way in which Deborah writes about that, she writes about it successively even moving in terms of its physical space from a purely Vietnamese space to Trader Village, which is a much more sort of international kind of space. As Prasad said, Indian Night, since the early 2000s, I think, has been on the SMU campus. But what we try and do there is look at those activities also as learning spaces for civic skills. In other words, it is a big deal to try and pull off these kinds of events. And you are learning, I mean, people sort of learn about leadership. They learn about negotiating permits to have these events, and you're up against government bureaucracy. I mean, you are learning a lot about how America, how it works. And so that's an important argument of the book, which nobody has ever taken this concept of communities of practice. And we see these festivals and these banquets as communities of practice for learning civic skills and as ways by which people can move from what we say is the periphery when you first come here from another country. And, you know, from being an outsider to being an insider, mm-hmm. that's sort of basically it. And we read this. So that chapter, I think it's that chapter. We've moved so much around in this book of sort of trying to make it cohere. But somewhere towards the end of one chapter, we also talk about spelling bees and beauty pageants. Yeah. I mean, these are really American events. And we all know how well Indian youth have succeeded at spelling bees. But we read them somewhat differently, you know, for what they say about entering the public sphere and again, claiming a kind of civic presence.
We'll talk a little bit more about communities of practice, because this is a different idea than what people might imagine as, you know, we've talked in the past about the process of acculturation, which almost draws someone perhaps away from their ethnic community or the community formed around their country of origin. You argue that communities of practice show us that that's not necessary, even as someone is more fully engaging with civic life in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, going back to the point that you can whatever word you want to use, assimilate, incorporate, but you can become increasingly part of that mainstream culture or part of America or feel yourself as American from a point of difference. And we need not to fear in any way all these diverse organizations and necessarily think about them as isolating or separating. So when we looked at and Prasad is a longtime member of the DFW Hindu temple, but you know, at the time that we were doing this work, we were watching both in the Vietnamese and Indian communities, the temples themselves getting organized to help Hurricane Katrina victims, just like everybody else in America. And that to us is a statement, you know, from their particular position of their religious institution and their community, you know, moving into and doing activities that represent sort of structural involvement in the larger public sphere so that you can maintain your cultural difference. And I think that's the wonder of America, in fact, and yet be a part of this larger enterprise or this larger project. And just going back to the question, I think about the similarities and differences between the Vietnamese and the Indians. These are very different populations. Mm-hmm. Vietnamese came as refugees. Indians are highly educated, come as economic migrants or to pursue higher education and then stay. I think what Deborah found, the Vietnamese, of course, that issue about communist Vietnam, which they fled, and the political issues surrounding that motivate a lot of their civic activity. And that was one major difference that comes out in the book, because I read, but again, I don't know if Prasad would agree with me, that it is important for this diversity of Indians to be unified, so the kind of hot button political issues that might divide people in India there's an attempt to temper them here so that you can work as a unified group, whatever the goal is, I think, in sort of entering the mainstream. But the similarities were also that, you know, both groups are using religious institutions, both groups are using their voluntary associations, their ethnic associations. Both groups have festivals and banquets that can be read as arenas of civic engagement. So that's the interesting, I think, outcome or result of the book.
So how do religious institutions function in this same way, in allowing people to be drawn into a community that is centered very much in this country but maybe made up of people who come from somewhere else?
Chris, what we need to do, we need to understand the population of Indian American population, the diversity here. By that, we can get the whole information out of it. We have about 100,000 plus Indian Americans in this metroplex, about 17,000 to 18,000 students from all major universities in North Texas, and most of them are in professions such as engineers, doctors, academicians, lawyers, public accountants, senior executives, small to large businessmen, entrepreneurs, artists, dance, music, teachers, performers, etc. All these people have different skills. When come to temples and religious places, not only Hindu temples, mosques, Buddhist places, Jain temples, etc., these people have different needs. And as the DFW metroplex is so widespread, the people can't travel from Mesquite, McKinney to Irving, where the main Hindu temple, the oldest temple is. That's why the needs are changing. When needs are changing, people are in pocket, different pockets. For example, in Plano, Richardson area, they have their own worship places. So as Fort Worth, Fort Worth is coming up with a new temple now. They have their own place. People are assimilating as well as going to different worship places to make sure that their needs are met in different places. So I didn't see any conflict. I don't see any crossing different paths each other. So it is going very well in this DFW Metroplex.
You talk in the book, Caroline, about the importance as people find, seek a sense of belonging in their newly adopted country, the importance of engaging in on multiple levels, in multiple places, in a way that those of us who aren't immigrants don't give much thought to, but you have your friends at work, and you have your friends at church, and you have people you associate with in the neighborhood, and you have family members. It shouldn't surprise us that immigrants do exactly the same thing.
Absolutely. But I think there's this layer there. Again, going back to the chapter where we talk about identities of, you know, in what places do you feel more American? And, of course, the work sphere is, you know, that's the great melting pot, right, where you have and in the kind of places where Prasad was just articulating, you find a lot of Indian Americans. But you know, people can talk about, well, I'm sort of American there and Indian at home. And So I think I will share this. We did a bunch of we worked largely with first generation immigrants, but we did do some research with second generation, with the children of the immigrants who first came here, and if they're naturalized or they're not naturalized as American citizens. And I think that issue is particularly tough on the children, trying to sort of keep these spheres separated. One remembers when one is doing anthropological field work, these wonderful ways in which people themselves can talk about their experience or their multiple identities. And I think that chapter opens with a Muslim, I think, you know, talking about, I can't quite remember the exact words, but he's talking about where he's Muslim, where he's Indian, where he's American in terms of his character. But the other one, so it's a very powerful one, and we anthropologists tend to focus on that. But the other was a young boy who I was interviewing, and he talked about his American side and his Indian side, and he could keep those separate. At school, he had his American side. On the weekends, doing all the cultural activities, he had his Indian side, pleasing his parents, until his mother gave him, I think it was a 16th birthday party, and she invited his friends from temple and his friends from the school.
The worlds collided,
and he actually said, I didn't know what to do. I was keeping these neatly separated. I was these two different people, and all of a sudden these worlds came together, and I had to deal with it. You know, and I think that's, you know, it articulates the experience of the second generation.
Absolutely. Caroline Bertel is with us. She's professor of anthropology at SMU and co-author of Civic Engagements, The Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. My second guest this hour is Prasad Thadakura, who is General Secretary of the Indian American Friendship Council. If you'd like to join us, the telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. We do have copies of Civic Engagements available this afternoon as a thank you gift if you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. You can do that by going online to kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington, senior producer of Think, is back in studio now. Hey again, Jeff.
Hello, Chris. This is a great show, and I worry that we've roamed into that territory where things are too interesting for people to call. And that's why we take these little breaks, is to remind you that there's more conversation coming up, a whole other segment with our guests. So take a moment right now and support the station. Great news, Chris. We met the match in the first break.
Fantastic.
So we have another speed match now.
Oh, okay, great.
Once again, Amy Titus, a fan of the station, has said, in this second break, the first three gifts of $120 will be matched dollar for dollar.
Wow.
The first
Go
three
80.
Gifts. Yeah. So if you want to contribute $120, get a copy of Civic Engagements for yourself. Your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar. The first three of you who call right now I'm going to give you the number in just a second, because I also want to remind you that our goal of 75 contributions this hour, we're making some progress on that too. We have 51 contributions left to go this hour to make the goal, and that goal is, it's a microcosm of the big goal. The big goal is $700,000 in 12 days and 3 hours, which would be, you know, tomorrow, late afternoon, early evening time to wrap it up. We've got less than 30 hours now to reach that. About 220,000 or a little less than that, perhaps, left to go. We can get there if we keep making these hourly goals. So if we get the 75 contributions, again, just 51 more to go this hour, we can stay on track to finish tomorrow. The number to call, 888-694-6931.
You can also go online to kera.org. You know, I get it. It's easy to say, you know, I'm going to do that later. I'm going to, I'll just get to it when I'm finished with this or when I'm done eating my lunch or whatever. It's so easy to forget if you do that. I mean, you know, Jeff and I are deadline people. We have lived, I have spent my entire career, which is now close to 20-something years. We'll just leave it at that. With a deadline. You know, we would never, you know, think 11 minutes late because we were busy doing something else or because we have other things going on. We know that you value this programming. We know that you value public radio. We know that the vast majority of you listening right now not only have a little bit extra in your budget that you can afford to make a contribution to the station, but you probably already do make contributions to other things. You are not that person who relies on everybody else to sort of pay your way to things. Please add KERA to your list of charitable giving, because this is a service that you use. This is it's different than a lot of other things where you're doing something only for other people, which is fantastic. But in this case, when you make a contribution, not only do you make a contribution to your community, but you are paying for a service that you consume.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what it's all about. The station is here today because other people gave. And maybe you gave in the past. Maybe it's time for you to renew. Maybe you can make an additional gift today. But we need to hear from 75 contributors at any level, whether it's a renewal, a new membership, an additional gift, by 1 o'clock to stay on track. Again, 51 contributions left to go. Are you ready for another episode of Jeff's T-Tag wisdom?
Yeah. What does your T-Tag say
My
today?
My T-Tag today says, patience gives the power to practice. Practice gives the power that leads to perfection. So in this—
How does that relate?
In this sense, practice, I would say, you know, practice what you believe is necessary to lead to the perfection of, you know, the closed circle, the public radio experience that you get from KERA. It's only possible if you, you know, do practice. And by do practice, that means call the number 888-694-6931 or practice your internet purchasing skills and go online to kera.org and make your contribution there.
I mean, I would simplify it in this way. And I think you made a great point, Jeff. Thank you to the Tetley Teabag Company or whatever that is. But
I think it's Yogi.
You know, sometimes we just have to take action for the things that we think are important.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you think public radio should exist, if you think this community is better off for having a place where we can have a conversation like this, I can guarantee you this conversation with my two esteemed, really interesting guests is not happening on any commercial radio station in this space. We're proud to be able to bring this to you because we think it's important. We think it's interesting. We think it's part of life in North Texas that we all want to understand. And we are the only ones who are going to bring you this in this market. And we're glad to be able to do that for you, but we can only do it because of your contributions. Need 47 more by the end of the hour. You can do your part at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. Back in just 2 minutes with Prasad Thadakura and Caroline Brattell.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Prasad Thadakura, who is General Secretary of the Indian American Friendship Council, and Caroline Brattell, SMU Professor of Anthropology and co-author of Civic Engagements, The Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Let's go to Zeeshan in Mansfield. Hi, Zeeshan.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Great show as always.
Thank
and,
you.
You know, thanks to your guests, Prasad and Caroline. I caught a bit of the show. I just wanted to make a quick comment. I'm really glad that they talked about the colliding of two cultures, because I'm the son of two Pakistani immigrants. I'm the, you know, me and my brothers are the firstborn Americans here. So I just want to comment that I'd love to hear these stories about how we have to juggle two cultures growing up as Americans, and then obviously, you know, pleasing our parents. So I just want to say great subject, and I really enjoyed the show.
Well, Zeeshan, before I let you go, did you feel like, I mean, do you feel like it's a burden or a blessing to be able to sort of code switch and go back and forth, and has it always been easy for you?
I find it a blessing. Yeah, it hasn't really been difficult just because my parents, I guess, just did a great job of helping us balance out. And, you know, I'm married and I have children as well. And my wife's from Pakistan. So it's interesting how we pass on what we've learned being born here to our children that are born here. But then my wife, you know, brings her culture. So I find it a blessing because my friends are very interested in what, you know, what our culture is about. So I like to educate them and they like to educate us. So it's a great, you know, really, truly, you know, like you said, melting pot. So,
well, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks.
Do y'all want to comment on that? Do you have thoughts?
Yeah. Zeeshan rightly mentioned it's not easy. It is a big challenge, as a matter of fact, for a youth to balancing two cultures. Indian Americans, especially Indian subcontinent, I would say, give a lot of highest priority for education as well as family values. Mm-hmm. And not only that, we want to make sure that our kids are successful in this competitive world. So they need to be good at education. There is no compromise there. Mm-hmm. They need to get A+. At the same time, they need to keep up their culture like Bharatanatyam, Kuchipudi, music, dance, whatever they want to learn. So they want to have those qualities also in them by that they can grow up a better citizen. So always it is difficult and tough for kids to balance those cultures, but we train them, we support them, we encourage them to make sure they are successful. So it is a bit challenging. It is not easy.
Yeah, and I think Kishan is right. I think the sort of whatever this American mainstream is, we are fascinated by elements of this different that these new populations have brought to America, particularly, you know, after 1965, but really after 1990 is when this growth really, really occurred. So, I mean, I'm addicted to Bollywood movies, too. But I think the other thing about the second generation that Kishan represents is, and something, even though this book tries to expand out the notion of citizenship, it's more than just voting, yeah. Even though that's important. It's more than just naturalization. It really is about practices and civic engagement and participatory citizenship in multiple ways. But I think what's interesting about the second generation, and I think Prasad could even speak to this better than I can, is again, the first generation is operating in a lot of these different organizations that we've been talking about, but there are members of the second generation, albeit some of what's called the 1.5, they came here as young children, basically grew up in America, of moving into the political sphere. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the next stage of really, so you can start learning civic skills in your temple or in your ethnic organization. You might move out into a Pan-Asian organization, the DFW Asian American Chamber of Commerce or some such thing. But that opens the door. So Deborah writes at the end of the book about Andy Nguyen, who was a president of the Vietnamese American community and now is on the Tarrant County Council. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is the next move nationally. And I know Prasad has been following it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. As a matter of fact, there is a very good point Carolyn brought up. That's where Indian American Friendship Council comes in. Indian American Friendship Council opens a dialogue with policymakers. And we encourage and support policymakers who in turn support and build better bridges between the largest democratic country, India, as well as the oldest democratic country, USA, on this earth. We are currently encouraging. I think still there are a lot of work needs to be done in this area. People think this political or policy making stream is not good to Indian Americans, but we are encouraging our youth to be in the mainstream politics also. It is as important as becoming a doctor, as an engineer, or any other profession.
That's hard for some parents.
It's hard.
I imagine Bobby Jindal's parents are proud.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Nikki Haley.
Yeah. But once you go in there, yeah, you can get rewards. Not only having money, but you will be satisfied that you are making something different in the society. But even though we have about more than quarter million, I would say, up 250,000 people in this country. But if you look at mainstream politicians, Indian American politicians, very handful. I would say Bobby Jindal, of course, of Louisiana, Governor Bobby Jindal, and Governor Nikki Haley of mm-hmm. South Carolina. We have about Kamala Harris, of Attorney General of California, Kumar Barve, Aruna Miller, Sam Arora. They are representing in Maryland State Assembly. Upendra Chivukula, he is a senior assembly member from New Jersey. Jay Goyal from Ohio State. And Prasad Srinivasan, who got recently elected as a Congress member, he gave up his doctor profession to become a politician from Connecticut. But still, I see a lot of room to grow in this area. And we are encouraging our Indian Americans, especially youth, who wants to become politicians and policymakers. See, all the issues, education, transportation, employment, all the economy, everything is related to everyone who are living here, not only Indians, Indian Americans, but we are part of the mainstream. So we need to be talking about these things. That's why we bring in all Indian American politicians, we did already, to this Metroplex to get some kind of information and get some kind of inspiration to our youth to go into the mainstream. What are the hurdles they were facing and how to be successful policymakers? That's where Indian American Friendship Council come in.
And politics can be an honest job.
Yes, it could be.
You know, the fact that we're having this conversation tells me that we've come a long way in this country because, you know, there was the old language of the melting pot. And I think for immigrants, you know, 100 or even 75 years ago, the aim was to arrive here and then shed anything that made you look different, not physically different, but anything that was a custom from where you had come from was thought of as sort of backward and not able to be fit into American culture. And it's interesting now that we're talking about ways of preserving who we are ethnically and culturally and still feeling fully American. And it seems to me that, I mean, obviously we have work to do, but we have, even over the course of your career, Caroline, have you seen a shift?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, as somebody who's sort of spent my whole career looking at immigration, I mean, I think we are away from that melting pot model into some sort of model. Some people call it a salad bowl because each of the pieces of the salad retain their distinctive.
You got the lettuce and the tomato and
yeah,
the cheese.
Everything, yeah. You know, every piece is distinctive, and together it is America. But I guess I would say I see this profound ambivalence all the time about that phrase of a nation of immigrants. Mm-hmm. And it's there throughout history, a kind of, dare I even say, love-hate relationship, you know, with difference. But I think the wonderful sort of the positive side of that story is we get over it all the time. And eventually that newcomer population becomes part of what it is to be American. But I do agree that, you know, in the 21st century, I think we're so global that we appreciate that difference. And, you know, I tell candidates who come to SMU, interviewing for jobs, I say, well, you know, I came here in 1988. You eat a whole lot better now in Dallas than you did in 1988, you know, and it's due to this large pop, you know, with different tastes and different different cultures. So not to say that, you know, we have all around us a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment, you know, which correlates with economic downturns. But so we're still struggling with it, you know, what it really means to be an American. But I think what we identify in this book in terms of these patterns of civic engagement, people themselves wanting to belong and finding ways to express that belonging through the kinds of activities they do, even from a point of ethnic institutions. They are being American in some sense, and they're claiming it for themselves.
Caroline Bertel is professor of anthropology at SMU and co-author of Civic Engagements, The Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. Prasad Thodakura is general secretary of the Indian American Friendship Council. It's been so nice to have both of you here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks to all of you who have been listening this hour, who have participated in the conversation, and especially we want to thank those of you who have made contributions of financial support. We have 39 contributions to go in order to make our goal for this first hour of Think. We've got a few minutes to do that, so now is the ideal time for you to go on the phone at 1-888-694-6931 or to go online at kera.org and make your contribution. We do have copies available of Civic Engagements, the Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. Those are available when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level, and you can choose that as your thank you gift. Of course, you can make those contributions on a sustaining membership plan, which means it would only really cost $10 a month out of your budget, which is, for many of us, almost small enough that you don't feel it at all. And yet you make a significant contribution to this station that brings so many interesting ideas, so many interesting people, so many interesting reading list items into your life. So we would really appreciate your support now at kera.org. Public radio is something that exists because of everyone who's involved with it. It is not simply a matter of those of us who work here at the station producing programming. We do the shows that we do, the topics that we do, because we know that they are of interest to you. We try really hard to work for you. Instead of selling your time to commercial advertisers, we come directly to you and say, look, if you value this, if you want a radio station that discusses quite literally everything under the sun, then please make a contribution to make sure that it stays strong and vibrant in this community. Good news, Jeff Whittington is back with us. That is not the good news, although it's great to see you here. It's good news, but we have made our second challenge grant. We have given those matches. So thank you very much to those of you in the last round who made contributions of $120, and they were matched.
Yeah, we're still looking for, I'm not sure what the...
I think we're at something like 39?
Out of 75 still to go. So 39 more contributions at any level will help us make our goal for this hour. And it's really important that we make it just so we can stay on track to wrap up this membership campaign tomorrow. I mean, that's the... Okay, so yeah, 38. It says 38 for the first hour. Of course, we're going to have a goal in the next hour too. So if you could go ahead and make your contribution right now, if you could call 1-888-694-6931 or contribute at kera.org, it would really help make this membership campaign a success. And, you know, it's going to be a success because we have to raise the amount of money we have to raise anyway. We don't want to extend it past tomorrow. We want to, you know, you asked for a shorter campaign, but it really is in your hands. Right now, this is up to you. It's up to you to go ahead and make that call. Go ahead and make that contribution so that we can wrap this campaign up.
I like to say sometimes, you know, we all get so used to resisting sales pitches that we all kind of have our hackles up and our defenses up. And whenever anybody asks us for money for something, we think, no, I don't want to do it. I don't need that thing. Well, you need public radio. You use public radio on a regular basis. We are not selling timeshare here. We are asking for a contribution to what I would imagine for a large number of you out there is among your very favorite radio stations, if not your favorite. This may be the first thing on your preset, or this may be the station you come to when you want to really understand important news and information. Maybe it's the best source you have of entertainment. You know, so many of those weekend programs, if you're driving all over town and running errands and ferrying children to and fro, it may be that the Car Talk guys and Ira Glass and everybody else really allow you to have a great time when you are getting things done on the weekends. We really appreciate your support, and we make your support work for you every single day of the year. Please go online now to kera.org and make a contribution there, or call 1-888-694-6931. As we mentioned a few minutes ago, we did receive the match of those three $120 gifts.
Yeah, I want to especially thank the donor, Amy Titus, for making that match available. And so we were able to secure those three $120 matches during the last break. So thanks again, Amy Titus. And of course, the rest of the goal still hangs there. 38 contributions to make our goal this hour of 75 contributions. You know, Chris, when we started the show today at noon, KERA listeners had contributed over $30,000 already today to trying to wrap this campaign up. And now it's in the next...
You don't like these fundraising campaigns?
It's in the next 30 hours now. Uh-huh. We're down to about 35 hours to try to finish this by 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. So it's really, you know, those of you who have not yet contributed, we're waiting to hear from you. The folks who have given to the station, they're waiting to hear from you. You know, if you really do love the station, you're listening now. You know, I would ask, why are you listening now if you don't love public radio here in North Texas, if you don't love KERA, if you don't get something out of it, because you don't find what you get on KERA anywhere else. As Chris said, you're never going to hear a conversation like the one we just had with Dr. Caroline Bertel from SMU and Prasad Thadakura, a businessman who's very involved in the immigrant community here and engaging in the community. He's also a member of the board at the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth. He's very active in the community. You're not going to hear that kind of conversation pretty much anywhere else here in North Texas for an hour. That's what you get here at KERA. And in the next hour, we're going to talk with Paula Broadwell, who's got a new book out on General David Petraeus, who's now heading the CIA.
This book has been everywhere. Paula Broadwell has been everywhere. But again, I would doubt very much that you've heard too many one-hour conversations with her one-on-one about her experiences, what she has learned about now CIA Director David Petraeus, formerly General David Petraeus.
It's worth your support.
About his leadership style, absolutely. It's worth your support, and it is so easy to make a gift of support. It takes just about 2 minutes on the phone at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org, where you can check out thank you gifts, set up a variety of different ways to pay, and engage deeply with the fantastic website that your dollars also help to provide.
It's all there for you. It's all there because of you. That's why we think it's worth your support. Make the quick phone call right now to 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. You can get a copy of the book, in the last hour, Civic Engagements. It's available to you when you join the station with a $120 contribution. It's by Carolyn Bertel and Deborah Reed Danahay, Civic Engagements, the Citizenship Practices of Indian and Vietnamese Immigrants. It's a very interesting social study, and if that's interesting to you, well, you can support the station and get a copy of it at the same time. Just don't wait. Call now.
1-888-694-6931 is our telephone number. Of course, you can also do this online at kera.org. Public radio is here because people just like you have made contributions. We say you. We hope that you are actually imagining that we are pointing at you wherever you're sitting or standing or walking. We mean you specifically, not everybody else except for you. So please think about making a contribution in any amount that feels comfortable to you, and keep public radio vibrant in this community. It's up to us all to make sure it happens. Please go online now to kera.org or call in to 1-888-694-6931. Thank you so much for your support.